Hello, it's time for the Queensland Storyteller. I'm Kim Dodsworth. Peter Lingard of Melbourne is today's contributor. Peter's a man of parts. Now listen, I'll quote to you from his letter. I've sold ice cream, been a bank clerk, bookkeeper and barman, delivered milk, served in the Royal Marines, bounced leery customers in a London clip joint, and lots more. Peter also tells me he's written 30-plus short stories and 4 novels. Peter Lingard, you pass the experience test with flying colours. Peter's story today is called Chop Logic. It's set in Paris, time, the French Revolution, theme, the deadly work of a certain unforgiving lady, fondly referred to by the revolutionaries as Madame la Guillotine. Marcel Desailly made an average income writing letters for the illiterate, poems for lovers, plays for amateur actors, and scandal sheets about the wealthy elite. Citizen Robespierre liked to read of the sexual shenanigans of French society. Marcel's words added strength to his convictions about the despots that ruled the country. Consequently, Marcel gained employment as an agent provocateur for the Committee for Public Safety. He was to become a diarist of the Reign of Terror, as Robespierre liked to call his campaign. Many of Marcel's stories fitted the committee's political agenda, and politically correct actors performed his zealous tracts. One of Marcel's sheets told of Jean Desplanques, one of the more popular executioners of Paris. The man once worked for Dr. Guillotin, and thereby knew all the intricacies of the humane tool of the Reign of Terror. Members of the hated Paris elite, or parasites, as Marcel called them, always had a few sous, or even livres, to give Jean to ensure a swift and trouble-free execution. Botched decapitations looked messy and were surely painful, so those to be beheaded always saved a few coins to grease the palms of their dispatchers. The bloodthirsty mobs, on the other hand, loved botched executions. They liked to see a princely head suspended from its neck by some sliver of flesh. Not too small a sliver, one strong enough to keep the head attached to the neck, whilst the executioner hauled the heavy blade back atop the scaffolding before once more releasing it on its deathly descent. A true son of the Revolution, Jean enjoyed his work. But his pleasure of dispatching the blue bloods of Paris was being marred by an ingrown toenail that pained him enormously. Now, Marcel's sin was that he wrote of Jean's ingrown toenail and how the money acquired through the man's grisly trade allowed him to seek out an approved medical practitioner to help relieve the pain.
"It's difficult to concentrate on my work when I'm in such pain," Jean told the doctor.
The nervous doctor lanced Desplanques' big toe, removed the nail, and told the patient to wear a cutaway shoe for a few days. The relief was so great, Jean went to La Petite Auberge for a few celebratory glasses of vin ordinaire. It was there Marcel heard the man's tale and told of it in the next news sheet. Marie Antoinette was scheduled for the chop 2 days after Jean's big toe had suffered the blade. The regal woman was not inclined to give some oaf money to cut off her head, and was looking for some way to show her defiance to the gang of terrorists that had so disrupted her life. Marcel's sheet provided her with the information she needed. As she bravely approached her place of execution, she espied Jean's cutaway shoe and stomped on his toe as hard as she could. Jean cringed in pain. "So sorry, monsieur," the queen told the black-masked executioner as he hopped on one foot whilst tenderly cradling the other. When he ran out of heads that day, the head-cutter hobbled to see Citizen Robespierre.
"If Marcel Desailly had not told of my toe, the queen would not have known to stomp on it," he complained. "I want that man banned from my life. It's hard enough doing the job I do without some puny scribe making things worse for me."
Robespierre agreed. He summoned Marcel to the offices of the Committee for Public Safety.
"Desailly, you will cease all your jottings from this day. The committee no longer needs you. Find yourself a man's job and bother us no more. If you have the misfortune to cross my path again, I will give you to Jean and tell him to whittle you down to size. Vive la République! Marcel was devastated. His writing job had provided him with a fair income and a smattering of prestige. In his neighbourhood, the second arrondissement, his reputation afforded him swaggering rights in the bars and bistros. Should word that he was no longer in favour with the Committee for Public Safety circulate, certain doors would close to him and he would be called to settle his accounts. It was time to go underground. Marcel's love of the revolution was only as strong as the lining of his pocket. If forced underground, why not start 2 daily news sheets, one supporting the revolution and one supporting the monarchy? He could still obtain ink and paper as long as his suppliers remained unaware of his purpose. The writer planned to reconstitute information gleaned from official publications few people read, add some gossip, be it true or imagined, and include the views of the everyday people as heard in the bars of Paris. He altered his writing style, usurping that of his printer Evrard, and was able to publish his first 2 sheets within 1 week of his dismissal by citizen Robespierre. In a very short time, circulation grew, and the accumulated sous turned into livres, and the happy Marcel forgot about the need to disguise his identity. It didn't take long before citizen Robespierre read copies of both yellow sheets and directed one of his agents to track down their source. One day in September, the rain came down with biblical force, and Marcel had to run for shelter. As he crossed the Rue Montmartre, he slipped on the wet cobblestones and fell under the wheels of a passing carriage. During the ensuing confusion, an arresting hand clasped his shoulder and marched him to the offices of the Committee for Public Safety. Robespierre shook his head and inverted his lips with arrogant disdain. "I told you to find another line of work, did I not? Do you think La Guillotine restricts herself to the monarchy? We have sent quite a few writers to the hereafter. François Noël Babeuf, Olympe de Gouges, Antoine-Joseph Gossas, Louis-Pierre Manuel, and André Chénier, to mention but a few. Now I will grant you the distinct privilege of joining their esteemed ranks. Not that you wield a pen as well as them, but because you are their equal when it comes to matters of crimes against the Republic. As a special favour, I will let our revered executioner, Jean Desplanques, dispatch you to whatever heavenly state exists for traitors. Bon voyage!" Desplanques smiled evilly when he found Marcel in the condemned prisoner's holding pen. "We meet again, my friend. This time I'll have my way with you." The executioner drew a finger across his windpipe and winked at his victim. "I have a special wood for measly scribes. I'm off now to my storehouse to prepare it for you. Until tomorrow, mon ami, au revoir." The crowd cheered as the prisoners entered the square. Citizens hurled decaying vegetation and fusty insults with delight. The condemned were led up a flight of wooden stairs, then made to stand in line to await the attention of Jean Desplanques. Marcel was third in the line. Once the first 2 had been dispatched, Desplanques held up his hand to delay the positioning of Desailly. The masked executioner moved the blood-drenched, heavy wooden headrest aside and manoeuvred another block of wood into place. He pointed to it and smiled at Marcel. "See, this is especially for the likes of you, Desailly." Marcel remained silent, determined not to show his fear. "Have you nothing to say, you miserable scribe? Or have you been rendered wordless by the writer's block?"
And that short story was Chop Logic by Peter Lingard of Melbourne. Thank you, Peter, for a great contribution to our program. I'm Kim Dodsworth, Queensland Storyteller. I'll be back again this time next week with another short story of quality.